I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. We are now in the midst of the holiday season, and between buying gifts and giving to charities and making end-of-year investment decisions, the public is making a lot of financial choices. Retailers depend on people opening their wallets at this time of year, and so do scam artists. Coming up, what you need to know about how to avoid being the victim of a scam, or put another way, how to be a savvy shopper. But first, we ask Paco Underhill to be our guest. He's an environmental scientist who has watched how men and women shop and how retailers influence our purchases. He's founder of EnviroCell, has written three books, including Why We Buy, What Women Want, and Call of the Mall. And Paco Underhill, it's been a couple of years. Nice to have you back with us on Radio Time.
Marty, it's a pleasure to be back. How was your gobble gobble?
My gobble gobble was quite good. How about yours?
It was just perfect.
Well, that's the way we like it. Let me ask you about some of the numbers coming in over the weekend. It looks like 133.7 million people shopped either in stores or online over the four-day weekend, but the numbers are down, something like 5.2%. Is this a big deal or not from your perspective?
I think it's testament to a couple of things. First of all, that we're trying to use 20th century measures in a 21st century context, meaning that that is the tally of people going into shopping malls, going into cyber sites, but it isn't looking at people going into all of the alternative places where people are shopping, like your local craft fair or the farmers market or places like that.
What do you think about today is Cyber Monday? Tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. We know about Small Business Saturday, Black Friday. Do naming these days, does that influence how consumers shop?
I think it's testament to the fact that merchants are desperately trying to lead when part of what the broader circumstances are is that they are struggling to follow. The single driving force in American consumption in 2014 is still convenience. And as we go into the holiday season, all of us are looking to both save time and save money.
When you say follow, you mean following consumers and what consumers are doing?
You know, it's just like fashion. In probably 1980, fashion could be dictated from New York, Paris, and London. Now fashion bubbles up from the streets. In 2014, all of us have smartphones, which means that we have access to pricing information, product information, peer reviews that have totally upset the apple cart of who controls what in the broader world of consumption.
I'm thinking about that individual retailer then. I mean, what do they do when faced with consumers with many different choices, with big box retailers offering all sorts of discounts? What can the small retailer do?
Well, I think the small retailer can play as smart as they possibly can and look for their own competitive advantage given the tools that they have. Can I give you an example, Marty?
Please do.
I have a friend who runs a women's evening wear business called Ossier's in a coastal town in Connecticut. She has a showroom. She stocks about 8,000 dresses. But she also has a telephone app where if you buy a dress from her, you register the dress and you register the event that you're wearing the dress to, and she guarantees no one else will wear the same dress to the same function. She's a small, independent merchant, but people will drive past Saks and Neiman Marcus to get to her because she has a unique selling proposition. I think that's pretty sweet.
It's pretty sweet and pretty smart as well. I mean, does that sort of cement the kind of loyalty that someone might have to a store then?
Well, I think it's testament to the fact that one of the great evening out factors is the internet, meaning that just as we can look intellectually that the internet can propagate the Psalms of David and the Protocols of Zion with equal weight, by the same token, the clever independent merchant can offer their own option online and compete effectively with the big boys who are inept and nowhere near as local.
Ah, interesting. Let me, since it is Cyber Monday, and I, you know, anyone that's looking at their smartphone is seeing all sorts of coupons and discounts and come-ons, how do you suggest we be a smart shopper faced with all those enticements?
You know, I think, Marty, we have to recognize what the holiday season is all about. And when we are shopping for other people, we are shopping for the icons of our feelings towards somebody else that often we aren't very good at articulating verbally. You know, I love you, I like you, I admire you. And probably the best gift giving isn't the amount of money you spend, but the thought that you put into it. And that being a good consumer is applying your logic and applying your knowledge of the person that you're trying to reach out to.
I mean, the sort of old-fashioned spirit of giving. Yes, we shouldn't lose sight of that.
I think it's also important to realize that one of the things that we have in our palate is not just access to stuff, but access to experience, access to consumables, and all of those should be in the palette of choices that we use in our gift-giving exercises.
You have written books about shopping, including one called Call of the Mall. Take us inside a mall and help us understand how stores are trying to entice us inside their store, inside their doors.
Okay. Well, first of all, in the broader world of shopping, we have gone from the polite 20th century wars where Burger King competed with McDonald's, Gimbel's competed with John Wanamaker, into what is probably more accurately put a 21st century bar fight where everybody is competing with everybody else for the customer's discretionary expenditure. And that as we move into a shopping mall, one of the important aspects of 21st century store design and merchandising is trying to find ways to engage all five senses into the shopping process. So someone is factoring both the sight lines. They are factoring in smell, which is probably one of the most powerful tools that we use. And smell is not just about what is overt, but often what is covert. And that I can go to different parts of the store and I can put in a slightly different smell that gets my saliva glands working. We also are putting product out there to be touched, because this is one of the things that a physical store can offer that a cyber store can't, which is the impression that comes through our fingertips. We also know that sound plays a terrific role. And if I'm Abercrombie and Fitch, sound is used to tell me both who belongs and who doesn't belong. But if I'm a Target or I'm a big box merchant, sound is also being responsive to my knowledge of who is shopping in the store when. Meaning on a Monday morning, hopefully all of your teenagers and all of your millennials are working, and therefore there's a time to play Frank Sinatra, there's a time to play the Beach Boys, there's a time to play Death Cab for Cutie.
And what about taste? How does that figure in?
Well, you know, when you walk into to a store and somebody offers you a sample, that sample isn't just to get you to buy what you've just sampled, but is to trigger your saliva glands. And probably some of the best advice I could give to any shopper is never shop hungry and never shop tired.
Because it makes us vulnerable to all of this, yes?
It makes us very, very vulnerable.
And how about how men shop versus how women shop?
Well, this is a historic divide. The way we characterize it is men that are hunters, They like to walk into the forest. Their skill is in how fast they can shoot something and drag it out the door.
I know exactly women, what you're talking about, Paco.
Okay. Women are programmed to be gatherers, meaning they get some joy out of the act of looking. You can meet your sister at the King of Prussia Mall, spend the afternoon, buy nothing, and have a fabulous time. But I think, Marty, one of the most interesting issues that we're facing is that while we have a historic divide between men and women, we also are having a divide between generations. And that we are watching a generation of millennials whose approach to shopping is almost as different from their baby boomer mothers and fathers as that difference between men and women were to start out with.
Can we assume that millennials are going online, they're doing research, and then maybe they will make their way to a store somewhere?
I think they are much more dependent on their mobile phones. They are processing what is cool, what is uncool, and what is cool neutral. They depend upon their peers, and I occasionally depend on mom to find where it is that they place their shopping bets.
Is that right? Really?
You know, in lots of stuff that we call cool neutral, which is, for example, cleaning products and stuff like that, we have a generation of millennials who are going back to mom and going, what was the dishwasher soap that you used?
And that goes back to that smell, right? The importance of smell.
It goes back to what our genetic programming is to remember the images, the smells, the sensual experiences from our youth.
About a minute before I have to say goodbye here, do you enjoy holiday shopping, Paco Underhill?
You know, I enjoy it professionally, meaning that one of the things that I do is often take people on escorted shopping trips and sort of explain things and point things out, and that I really love. It's about being intuitive. It's about cleaning people's glasses. But when it comes to shopping myself here, I'm just another aging male animal.
Meaning you go in and you shoot what you need and drag it out the door?
Yeah, I'm guilty of that more often than I'd like to admit.
Well, on that note, Paco Underhill, thank you for getting our conversation started, and thanks for joining us today on Radio Times.
Marty, it is my pleasure. I hope you and yours and your listeners have a pleasant, focused holiday season.
And right back at you. Thanks so much, Paco Underhill. He's an environmental scientist, founder of EnviroCell, author of several books, including Why We Buy, What Women Want, and Call of the Mall. We're going to take a very short break, and then we have two guests waiting in the wings. We'll be talking about some of the scams to be on alert for. And we'll be taking your calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Today is Cyber Monday. Tomorrow is Giving Saturday. Last Saturday was Small Business Saturday. And, of course, Friday was Black Friday. We are in the holiday season, the season to spend money. And we have two guests who have joined us in our studio to talk about what to be on the lookout for when it comes to scams and come-ons and all the things that we face as shoppers. Let me introduce them to you. Chris Moran is deputy editor for Consumerist, and that is owned by Consumer Reports. Chris, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Also with us is Andrew Good, and he's vice president of the Better Business Bureau. Andy, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
My pleasure.
Should we be on the – I mean, it is the season to buy things for other people and to be part of the holiday spirit. Chris, is it also the season to be on the lookout for scammers?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you're spending money sometimes carelessly, and so there are scammers out there trying to take advantage of you, and there are retailers trying to take advantage of you as well. So, you know, it's you have to be a smart shopper for the next you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks.
Give us the scam du jour. What are some of the scams that are out there that people should be aware of?
Well, a long running scam involves gift cards, store branded gift cards, especially where the scammers will go out in advance of the holiday season, or they'll somehow obtain illicitly the numbers that belong on the back of the gift cards, you know, the PIN numbers, and they will then wait until they're purchased and then activate. You know, wait until those cards have been purchased at the retail. And a lot of people don't spend that money right away. You know, you go to Macy's,
right,
and you buy your friend a $50 gift card. Once you buy it, that card's activated. So whatever the PIN number on the back can be used. If somebody has that information, they can just, once they know it's been activated, they can go out and start spending that money wildly. So all they do is they amass this number, these lists of numbers, and then they start calling the automated system to find out the card's been activated. And then as soon as they realize it's been activated, they go and spend the money, assuming you're not going to yet.
Wow.
So people wait until January, February, June, and then they find out their $50, $100 gift card is completely useless.
And how often does this happen?
Every holiday season.
Okay.
There was a huge incident, I think, in 2012 where Macy's someone had to have gotten a list from somebody connected. It was too large a scam, too nationwide. Mm-hmm. And Macy's apologized and offered refunds. But, I mean, we hear about it every year. We hear somebody, you know, I went to Best Buy and this happened, or their Visa gift cards. You know, all somebody has to do is peek in the little back or
and write down the number.
Write it down or pull it out of the card. A lot of people don't check the cardboard packaging, so they'll be able to slip it out, scratch off the back, and people don't realize until it's too late.
You're nodding your head.
Yeah, and there are actually some perpetrators who are taking expired cards or fake cards, removing the real card, sticking the fake card back into the envelopes, and then once the real card is activated, they then get to go ahead and use it too. Either way, they're on top of it because they have numbers, and once the money's loaded to the card, the money's theirs.
So what do you suggest any people do?
Well, I think there's a couple things. One, check the packaging. Look very carefully at what you're buying. More importantly, I think if you're buying a gift card from a retailer, buy the gift card that retailer has. So if you're at a particular store, buy their gift card. Don't buy the gift cards off the rack that they might have of 100 different other types of gift cards, because those are the ones that are more likely to be stolen or copied. Another thing to do is to use the money quickly. Whenever you receive a gift card, try to use it quick, because that's true not just for this scam, but it's also to protect yourself against a company going out of business. Because if a company goes out of business, very often the funds on that card are lost.
And I've heard that people often do not use their gift cards at all. I mean, I don't know.
Billions
what the percent,
a year go.
Is
go
that what
unused.
It is?
Yeah, I think it's over a billion a year.
Put in
go
the drawer
unused.
Somewhere,
yeah.
And people forget about
yeah.
it.
I know when Borders went out of business a few years ago, they had millions and millions of dollars of unused gift cards.
Wow.
You know, and those people are still technically creditors. You know, and so, of course, they're last in the list in the bankruptcy filing. So you end up getting pennies on the dollar for the value of your gift card.
So if you see kind of gift cards hanging on a kiosk somewhere, beware. Don't use those. Stay away from those.
Yeah. And we at Consumerist just suggest giving cash. If you're going to give people money, no one can scam cash, unless it's counterfeit, in which case, the department, the Treasury Department's involved.
But that's pretty rare,
yeah.
I would assume, yeah. Certainly among friends.
Yeah, and you can also ask, go to the service desk and ask for a card from behind the service desk, one that's not accessible to the public. It makes it a lot more difficult to copy.
And most major retailers allow you to now buy online gift cards, where it's just an email with a number or a passcode. That can't be, no one has that information. If someone has that information, then there's a huge leak at the retailer.
Sure.
And, that's beyond a scam. That's a hack. I would suggest going to Macy's or Amazon and getting an actual online thing that you buy from the website.
You had talked to one of the producers for the show about Craigslist scams to be aware of. And I don't know if this is peculiar to this time of year or just something that we should keep in mind around the clock.
It's an around the clock thing, but it's prevalent this time of year just because people are looking for deals. When you see the Xbox One is suddenly someone selling it for $200 out in Mount Airy, and you go to meet them, they could be there to mug you. They could be there to they could be selling you a box of bricks. If some of them trick you into giving them your PayPal information first before you show up, or, you know, if they're remote and they say, oh, PayPal me the information, then I'll mail you a box. And a lot of times that box either never shows up or it's a box of bricks.
You mean that, a box of bricks?
Oh, yeah. No, that's another scam is the returned box of bricks or notepads, especially with iPads. Because, you know, all it takes is somebody to have a shrink wrap machine, which costs a few hundred bucks. Or a lot of people have access to them through their various work. So you go and you buy an iPad at the store or anything of that. So any sort of desirable electronics, video games work too. And you take it out of the package, fill it with notepads, anything that weighs about the same, shrink wrap it again, take it back to Walmart or Best Buy or wherever. And these places don't check. It's still sealed. And so they assume then you have the receipt. So they give that person the money back. And then the next person that comes in to buy it, you know, they don't know till they get home or till it's opened up on Christmas morning. We hear so many complaints every year.
Really?
Christmas morning.
A bag of sand or a bag of...
Yeah, a bag of junk.
Bag of junk.
You know, it happens way too often.
Well, it sounds like, Andy, people, if you're buying something like that, open the box while you're in the store to make sure what you're buying is what's in the box.
Absolutely. They can check that out. There are certain products, though, electronics and things like that, that you may have... There may be issues with restocking. Of course, go up to a clerk and say, is it okay if we open this up? I'm concerned. I think you need to be aware of placement in the store as well. Is it in a place where something is well hidden? Are these items kept behind lock and key? Probably those are less likely to be tampered with. But if anything can be taken out of a case, walk to the back of the store. So, yeah, and tampered with and brought back. So, yeah.
Open the box.
Know what the weight should feel like. You can even check online. Most products, because of shipping issues, they'll show what the weight is for a particular product. And a lot of the electronics, particularly handheld things, that's a purchasing issue for them.
Yeah. And if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. I mean, words to live by, right?
That's our year-round general rule.
Don't fall for what looks like the deal of the century.
Exactly.
Right? Let me just quickly reintroduce you. We are talking about scams to be on the lookout for during this holiday season. Andy Good is Vice President of the Better Business Bureau. Also with us, Chris Moran, Deputy Editor for Consumerist, which is owned by Consumer Reports. And we invited them to join us on Radio Times to kind of pick their brain about what to be on the lookout for. And again, we want to hear from you. Any questions or comments, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Now, tomorrow is Giving Tuesday. I don't know if this is a new thing or not. It's certainly new to me. Let's talk a bit about charities and the potential for scamming when it comes to charities.
Yeah, I mean, this happens especially this time of year, and also we're always writing about this whenever there's a natural disaster or anything like that. Like after Sandy, there were so many scams of people, trying to raise, in quotes, people can't see my air quotes, trying to raise money.
I saw them, though.
Yes.
That's what I mean.
And people don't do their checking. You know, these people come, some of them come with very professional-looking packages, nicely printed packages and pamphlets. But, if you actually go online, I know the Better Business Bureau has – you guys have a database, right? And there's Charity Navigator and GuideStar, I think is the other one. These are all places where you can check these sort of things. The FTC has a database where you can search for complaints. There's so many places to check. Just never give our rule of thumb is never give anybody any money when they come knocking at the door, ever. Unless you absolutely know the person and you are willing to never see that money again, and to believe it may not get to where it's going.
Well, it's interesting. Let me go back to you, Andy, because I'm surprised people still do knock on people's doors asking for money. It's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to our listeners as well. And frankly, I find that surprising.
It sure does. I think there is an attraction to the face-to-face solicitation. It's hard. It's also hard to it's very hard for a lot of people to deny somebody face-to-face when they're requesting something, particularly in a charitable form. This time of year, we see a lot of charitable donations because people are in a giving mood, because corporations and other companies are trying to get – and individuals are trying to get their donations in before the end of the tax year as well. and it makes this a pretty charged event mm-hmm. right now. I agree. People need to kind of put their emotions in check, and any reputable charity will not care whether the donor, and this is even in the times of a calamity, they will not care if the money is paid right then and there. They'll wait a week. They'll wait a month. They'll wait a year if you want to donate. A good charity is going to take your money and be interested in having it no matter when. So that gives you time. That buys you the time to do some research. It buys you the time to go back and check out the charity, make sure it's legit. Make sure it's not a copycat charity. There are dozens and dozens of charities that trade on the name cancer. There are dozens and dozens of charities that trade on the name veterans or Vietnam. And many of them are not the ones that you think you're giving to, but they sound – or that you want to give to. And they sound an awful lot like the ones you thought you were giving to.
And when you say legit, people can go to Charity Navigator and some of these other sites and see literally how much money goes for administration, how much money goes into programming. I mean, those things are what they're – because it's filed –
Yeah, the Better Business Bureau has actually taken a different approach. We have a more holistic approach at looking at this. We also want to look at governance. We want to look at the effectiveness of the charity and look at what they're measuring and are they meeting their goals. We want to see how is that board structured? Are there a lot of people in the same family that are running the charity? So this maybe looks more like a business, a family business, as opposed to somebody that's actually doing good for the cause. Mm-hmm. And of course, the funding versus the fundraising costs versus what the programming costs. Those are important. They're all important measures. But I think to look at one and disregard the others is probably a mistake. We think that people should look at sort of the whole group of them.
And you can cross reference as well. Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, and I just want to say that if you get a cold call, even if it's a legitimate one, or somebody knocking at your door, I personally believe and consumers believe that it's better to donate directly to the company because, as you said, there are in some cases extreme fundraising costs. Some of these third party fundraisers, I know the New York Attorney General had to knock several down a peg last year for taking sometimes more than they were bringing in.
Wow.
They were actually profiting much more. They raised $30,000, but they were charging $40,000. So if you're going to give, if you can give directly to the charity, that's the best route because that's the way they're going to get the most money.
I mean, it's so egregious to think that people would use a pseudo-charity to make money as opposed to helping people out.
Yeah, and the fundraisers themselves, a lot of them are for-profit companies that are working on behalf of the charities. So every time you – if you get cold-called at home, a lot of times the person who's making that call works for a company that's in business to raise funds for other charities. They have contracts with the charities. And they may be paying or taking 30, 40, 50% of that money to pay their costs and earn their profit, and then only 50% then moves on to the charity. So, again, another reason to give directly to the charity.
We have an email. Are there any numbers that might indicate scams are on the rise? Do we know that, Chris? Any way to track those numbers?
I mean, I believe FTC complaints in general are on the rise, but I think that's more an indication of people being aware of the fact that they can complain to the federal government about these sort of scams and to other agencies. So I think it's, I think that's more indicative of. I do think that consumers are getting savvier. At the same time, I think so are criminals. Criminals that criminal nature will always find a way around. It's like water in a leaky basement. It'll always find its way in.
This is a little thing, but sometimes at cash registers, if you're at the supermarket and you're cashing out and they say, give us a dollar or two and we'll give this to a charity. And I don't know. I never know. There's no money actually involved, but I'm looking at you, Andy, how we should think through something like that.
Well, there's a number of things to think about there. One is is it actually the supermarket that's doing it? Sometimes you're at the cash register and they say, would you like to donate $3 to whatever the cause is that the supermarket is, and they'll put it right on your bill. In that case, you can feel comfortable that that's going there. Now, for people who do that and are also interested in tax write-offs, who's getting the tax write-off can't be taken twice. So you might not be able to take your tax write-off because the corporation might be taking theirs. So you have to think about things like that. It doesn't it's not usually a big issue because the supermarket ones are generally low dollar figure issues. For them, it's a big dollar issue, but for the consumer, it can be pretty low. But the other thing that the other thing is you never really know who left that coin box. And sometimes that coin box is left just, you know, it's the neighborhood soccer club that comes in and puts it down. And that may be quite legit, but
sure,
you don't know what that's going to. You don't know if they're giving the money over to somebody else, if they're actually fundraising to get, you know, something for their thing, or it's a, you know, it's a parent fundraising. So my recommendation on that would generally be to stay away and to give your money to save up your coin, your quarters and pennies and nickels, and give a more substantial donation to something that you really care about.
You're nodding your head.
Yeah, no, I agree completely. I know in general, you know, I like to believe that people are decent, and I know in general when you walk into a McDonald's and there's a coin drop thing, that the managers are giving it then to the, you know, to whoever goes up the tree. But we've written any number of stories over the years of either employees stealing from it or managers putting out illicit, not specifically at McDonald's, but
I got you.
You know, at various places that have donation boxes, which sometimes are legitimate, but a manager will see a box full of cash this time of year, especially when it can be quite full. And it can be tempting. Sometimes they just use it to make change, and somebody sees them doing it, and it looks really bad. I actually worked at Dairy Queen out in Montgomery County many years ago, and we had one of those, and my boss did use it to make change, and somebody saw him, and I happened to know he was making change. So I was able to calm the customer down. But
it looked bad.
It's something he should have done after hours behind closed doors.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about the fact that this is a time of year when people make a lot of financial decisions. And we're talking about some scams and things to be on the lookout for or of or from. Andy Good, Vice President of the Better Business Bureau. Chris Moran, Deputy Editor for Consumerist, which is owned by Consumer Reports. And again, lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne, and we are talking about things you should know to be a savvy shopper. And again, Chris Moran, Andy Good, our guest. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. Today is Cyber Monday. And Chris, I wonder if there are any particular scams that have grown up around this day.
I mean, there are plenty of look-alike websites. I think they're getting fewer. I hear about them less and less because I think our readers are getting savvier. But they still exist, so people are still being taken in. Things that'll say, you know, SonyPlayStation.org is actually written in the word. You know, they'll write out the words .org, things like that.
Oh, like .org?
Yeah.
Oops.
You know, things that show up in search terms. Google's getting better about filtering these things out too, but somebody will search PlayStation deals, and you know these faked sites, these will pop up first, or they're questionable. Some are not fake, you know. Some are selling you something several times what it's worth, based on this illusion that there's a demand. I say if you're going to be shopping online, stick to sites you know. I'm not saying stick only to Amazon, but but do your research. You know, Google the sites that you're on. Go to the Better Business Bureau because websites, online retailers are on there. You know, we wrote a lot recently about that cell phone accessory outlet, which is under a dozen different names, which has an F rating from the Better Business Bureau up in New York, which had a return policy where policy where you couldn't complain. If you complained online, they charged you $35.
What?
Yeah.
It's happening.
It's happening.
Yeah. California just passed a law outlawing that kind of non-disparagement clause. But these scammy companies are doing this, and they're actually living off that. They're basically putting out bad products, hoping people complain so they can get their $35. Yeah, and they have their credit card number, so they just charge the credit card number.
Well, let's talk about returns, Andy. Go ahead.
Yeah, I think this time of year, I think people need to, as you're making the purchase, that's when you need to consider the return. The problem is a lot of times people will buy something and they think, well, they can always return it later. Well, how does a person who's receiving a gift return something? They have to know what store it is. It would be better if they had a gift receipt. in the ideal world, this time of year, particularly maybe all year round, every retailer would give a gift receipt with every purchase instead of having to ask for it. So a consumer really needs to ask for it. Some retailers do automatically give gift return receipts in their receipt strip. But I think it's important that people understand that sometimes during this time of year and for the month or so after the holidays, the return and refund policies change because there's so many returns and other issues related to the holidays. And, you know, they create special lines and the retailers create special lines and special services for conducting returns. So I think people need to really pay attention to those refund and return policies. If you're buying online, check to see if they're restocking fees. Check to see who's paying for the return, the actual shipping costs of the return. If you're giving a gift of a gift card, which we understand, I think 57% of the purchasers out there will be giving a gift card this year. So if you're giving a gift card, you know, you might want to give a receipt to the person who receives the gift card showing where it was purchased in case, you know, they run into one of the issues that we had dealt with earlier.
Well, I wanted to, Chris, and you see, you know, delivery trucks is all over the place now, and many of them offering free delivery and all of that. And yet I'm trying to imagine if you're ordering presents on December 22nd, you're going to run into problems.
Yeah, I expect it's going to be just like last year where a lot of people don't get their things until December 26th, 7th, 28th.
Right.
Especially since UPS and FedEx have both raised their rates this year. So Amazon is really leaning on USPS. Yeah, I purchased a few things from Amazon in the last year and in the last few weeks, and a lot of them are going Postal Service, which is not to slag the Postal Service, but they are nowhere near as reliable or as accountable as the other services. And they have fewer delivery days and fewer trucks. And so I think that's going to make things – I think that's even going to make things even worse. What people don't know about this is if a site or if any retailer that, you know, like mail order has a guaranteed delivery date, to take advantage of that, because you can get things back even if the shipping is included in the price.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon, I know if you're an Amazon Prime member and it doesn't come by the date guaranteed by 8 p.m. on that day, you can call and they'll extend your Prime subscription for a month. You know, you have to ask. You have to say, what are you going to do for me? But they'll do it. And further to Andy's point about the returns, especially this time of year, we've had a lot of problems over the years, especially with national retailers, where, say, I buy a gift for my friend in Chicago. You know, sales tax is different here and there.
Huh.
And I say I buy it here at the Walmart in Columbus Boulevard and send it to her, and then she goes to return it because it doesn't fit or she doesn't like it, whatever. A lot of times she would only get the sales tax for the local sales tax. She wouldn't get back the full price that I paid. Walmart's policy is you should get back the full price.
Right.
But then there are also these little-known codicils in these various policies about limited time offers and holiday things and certain items. We heard this a lot last year with toys where if it's not returned immediately or if it's returned after January 1st, that kind of thing, you know, varies from store to store, but you don't get the full price. You only get the price that it's on sale for at that moment. So if something, you know, if you bought something at $15, you bought a toy at $15, and suddenly they're clearing it because they're getting rid of all their toys in early January, they're clearing it at $5. That person's only going to get the $5 back.
Or some stores set the policy where clearance items are just not returnable at all. I mean, and I think that's an important point. Why people should ask for return and refund policies is there really isn't an awful lot of there aren't a lot of laws about it. Mostly the laws have to do with publication of the refund and return policies. So in a lot of stores, and what you want to look for is a big sign somewhere at the front of the store near the cash register explaining that. Read it. Understand the terms. Sometimes in Philadelphia, they have to actually have a sign posted or put the return policy on the receipt. So look for it there. But again, that's a county rule. It's a county ordinance. So that's not the case everywhere. So it really varies. And the only time you really are entitled to a refund is if you purchased a product and it doesn't work for the purpose for which you purchased it. It just simply doesn't work. then the merchant is obligated to take a refund and or give you a refund and take
and,
the product.
And if you have a box of bricks, as you were describing, Chris, I mean, what's the return policy on that?
They should be taking it back, but that's the reason we hear about it so much is it ends up, especially on local news. We hear this. We get all these local news stations from all around the country send us this story every year where somebody comes to them saying, I'm trying to get Walmart to take back this box of notepads, but they won't believe me because I took it home for 2 hours. And then finally, once the local news reporter calls up Walmart, they're like, oh, we're going to make an exception in this case. That's basically once the media gets involved, they'll fix it. But until then, you might be, for lack of a better term, screwed.
And then they fixed one person's problem, but not everybody's.
They haven't fixed the systemic issue that's causing this, that loophole that's allowing this.
And just to underscore what we said earlier, so open the box in the store so you know exactly what's
or order, in there. Order from online because you're much less likely to get that problem when you order online.
To you, Andy, you think about all the times we give out our credit card numbers. I mean, even transactions at a cash register or online. To me, it's always amazing that there aren't more problems, considering how many people are scribbling down or computer somewhere is taking our information.
Well, we don't know if there are a lot of problems or not because
we
just simply don't. I actually earlier, about 2 months ago, I got called from my credit card company asking if I had purchased $1,500 worth of clothing from a Marshalls and a TJ Maxx up in Bethpage, New York. And I think the credit card company knew I hadn't because I had used that very same card a couple hours earlier at my doctor's office near my home. And, they kind of put two and two together. I don't know where my credit card was hacked. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. It could have been the Target or Walmart, Target or Home Depot issue. It could have been that I gave it somewhere in New York when I was visiting that somebody copied the numbers down. I have no idea.
Right.
So it really is – it can be very difficult to kind of track
that
security.
But did the credit card – I mean, they called you, but do they – how much do they track this stuff?
They have algorithms that will watch shoppers. Right. I mean, it's routine that if you're going away on vacation, you may want to call your credit card company and let them know that you're going away on vacation. That way, if they see charges from here, they'll be suspicious, and they'll also know that if they're seeing, charges from Timbuktu, they'll understand why that's happening as well. So their algorithms are pretty smart though, and they are kind of putting together your shopping patterns for better or worse. In this case, it's for better. they put together your shopping patterns and figure out where whether you're being scammed or not.
Do you want to add to that, Chris?
Yeah, I've actually been I've had my debit card, my Chase Bank debit card, compromised twice in the last year. The first time I noticed it was a very small charge. It was a $10 charge in, I would say, February. And I actually worked with Brian Krebs, the journalist who breaks almost all these hacking stories these days, and worked with him, and we eventually he did a lot of work, but we eventually traced it back to this payment processing company. I think they're operating out of Malta, which had done done the same scam a few years earlier. They're basically finding credit card numbers and forcing them through this payment processing company to see which ones work, and then once they find out the ones that work, then they either just chisel away. Or not. And my second compromise was a few months later in August. I was part of the Home Depot breach. I used my card at the Home Depot on at Columbus Boulevard to buy some garbage bags and some other stuff. And 3 days later, I got but Chase caught this one. I got a call at 6 a.m. Automated call saying there was a questionable charge and it was a $600 charge in South Korea. But they caught that and didn't process it. So they proactively stopped that one, and I didn't even have to get that back, but I did have to wait another 3 days for a new card and change all my automatic billing and everything else. So it's a bit of a nightmare.
It is a bit of a nightmare.
This is one of those areas for year-round vigilance because what happens with these things is that the people who take all the information don't necessarily use it right away because once they have your credit card information, it's a time bomb essentially, and you don't know that they have it. And so they may sit on it for a year. The only thing they need to do is use it before your expiration date of that credit card or debit card because otherwise it's just a time bomb. So, again, you have no idea when or how these things got hacked. The truth is, just like the two of us, everybody's going to run into this. It's, you know, it's going to happen to you. It's just, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. So be ready for it.
And check your statements.
Check your statements regularly. Monthly because, and I'll, the other thing I think that was important is that you're going to, a lot of the scams are going to be $10 at a time, not $200, $300, $400, $500 at a time. They're going to be small things that you're, as you're going down the list. So look at the items and see if the items square with what your buying patterns normally are.
Chris, let me go back to you and just talk. Is this a good time of year, though, to get the things that are on sale? I mean, we're getting come on saying 40% off this, 25% off that. One wonders, are the retailers making money under those conditions? And are those real offers?
Yeah, I mean, they're definitely real offers. To sort of follow up on something Paco said earlier in the first segment, he said, "Don't shop while hungry." You know, I think a lot of people are shopping now while metaphorically hungry, while greedy. I think I was looking at the NRF numbers, the National Retail Federation numbers from over the weekend, where they said 74% of people bought something for themselves this weekend.
Amazing.
Which, you know, those people aren't buying gifts. And they may just be looking, well, oh, wow, this, you know, this speaker that I've been looking at for the last 3 months, it's finally $50 off. But you don't need that speaker. You know, you maybe you do, but most of us don't. And so, you know, you're shopping while hungry, and that's a mistake. And yeah, you're getting a good deal on it, and you may not get that good deal 6 months from now. But the problem is you're lumping in that good deal with all the gifts you're buying for other people and all your other expenses, you know, holiday parties, outfits, food, travel. And so come January, February, you're going to, you know, whatever savings you had could go out the window with a credit card. You know, if you're buying with a credit card, you know, forget those $50 savings. You know, you're going to end up paying a lot more than that in interest, you know, if you stretch this out over a year.
And Andy, I'm wondering whether, I mean, should we be making our purchases when those post-Christmas sales start? I mean, is that really where the bargains are?
Well, it depends. You know, as in anything, it depends. Sometimes you know, you may have been disappointed, wanted something else, so you go ahead and shop for yourself and find something that you like. You know, a lot of times the stores are clearing their inventory because right after Christmas is over, you know, I shop at Costco from time to time. And when August hits, the first Christmas trees go up on their shelves. Oh. When Christmas is over, I guarantee you there will be swim goggles and swimsuits on their shelves. And it starts that quickly. So these big clearance sales also are to aid the retailers in clearing their space to get ready for the next season or the next item. And that's, you know, that's part of it. So you're doing them a favor to give them space. So, yeah, they'll put things on sale. But, you know, as in anything, make sure you're doing apples to apples comparisons. Make sure that the TV that they're selling right after Christmas, you know, is that year's model, not a year or two ago's model, and it's being discounted because they're selling you something that's a little older.
Yeah, I mean,
final word to you, Chris.
Most
of these
doorbuster deals are just junk. You know, they
want to get you in the door.
Yeah, there's these $70 TVs. Those TVs are worth $50. Yeah, they're 3 years old. They're there just to get you in the door and get you spending something and to clear their inventory. These are advanced clearance sales. And so, yeah, I wouldn't trust any doorbuster deal unless you know you want to buy junk.
And who doesn't want to buy junk? Well, my thanks to both of you for joining us today in Radio Times. Chris Moran, thanks so much. Deputy Editor for Consumerist, which is owned by Consumer Reports. Andy Good, thank you very much as
thank
well.
You.
You're welcome. Vice President of the Better Business Bureau. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program, including podcasts and Twitter, Facebook, and how to find us on satellite radio. I'm Marty Moscoane. Thank you so much for joining us in this first hour of Radio Times. But don't go away. We've got hour two waiting in the wings. We'll be right back.